I can get you into business class or first class. See, because the customer's taken the plunge and bought the first item, he or she, or you, is so set on being right and making a good first decision that you'll tend to make second, third, and fourth purchase additional products and services in order to ensure your first decision is correct. You know, there was a situation where I was raising money for my church, and I was working with this individual that had been very resistant to making contributions. When I finally got him to agree to make a donation, after much resistance, I congratulated him. As I watched him write a check, and this guy was tough, okay? Separating for money was not easy. As I watched him write the check, I looked at him and said, you know, you're gonna do more for our church than you're doing right now before you die. I know your heart's in the right place. You're a very, very generous human being. Appreciate what you've done today. You know you're going to do more. Why don't you just do the rest right now? He looked at me and said, you're right. Tore up the first check and wrote me another check for 20 times the amount that he'd initially decided on. Wow. Second money, easier to get than the first money. First money's taken me hours and months before, sometimes a year to get. And then get the second money in minutes. If you've ever seen someone at a restaurant complaining about the price of a steak, then turn around and order a bottle of wine that's $140. Three times the cost of the steak, twice the cost of the meal. See, you know what I'm talking about? How about the person that whines about paying $10 for a movie ticket and then spends another $20 on popcorn, soda, and candy? What's he doing? Second money. Have you ever heard of a guy complaining about how high his car payment is? Oh man, these payments are going to kill me. And then the same guy goes down the street, customizes a car with 22-inch wheels, custom paint job, installs a stereo system that you can hear from three blocks away. Of course, he had to charge on a credit card at 18%. And the payments on the wheel, the paint, the audio system amounted to more than the payments in the car. Yay, yay, yay for the second money. Learn this one, and your income will change forever, and your life will change forever. The more they spend, the better they feel. Your prospect, regardless of what he says to you, always wants to spend more, not less. Believe it or not, people love to spend money. And the more they spend, the more they will enjoy spending it, and the more they will enjoy their decision. You know, I was at a concert recently. My wife bought us tickets. I told her when we sat down, I'm like, baby, don't ever buy these tickets again. I want the best tickets in the house. I don't want to sit up here, turn my neck, and not get the best of the show. I'd rather pay more and get the best than pay less and make a mistake. Show me one person who has ever, ever come under budget when buying a home or building a home, buying furniture, buying a car, buying equipment, buying clothes, buying a vacation. Show me anybody that comes under budget. Why? Because people feel better when they spend more. These people that stay under budget, I don't think they exist. Consumers want to take home lots of things, lots of bags, lots of stuff, not just one thing. They want to brag to their friends and their neighbors that they spent the most money and bought the most expensive thing. People love showing off. If there didn't, there wouldn't be a market for sport cars, designer clothing, watches that are bigger than your wrist. See, anyone, for instance, can buy a leather purse that will last just as long as a Chanel or a Gucci bag or whatever, all these bags, a Versace bag. But people know that the designer brand costs 10, 20, and sometimes 50 times more because of the label and the insignia. Look, this is America. It's a nation of consumers and one-uppers. If it's up to America in the Western way, the whole world will become like this. A nation, a world of consumers, one-uppers. I look good. I have the label. Good or bad, whether you like it or don't like it, we like to buy things and we like to be seen buying things. Therefore, the second purchase reinforces the first purchase. Makes the first purchase the right decision and becomes your friend. Second money is easier to get than the first money. People will tell you, don't be greedy. Don't complicate the sale. Just finish it. No, 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 don't do it. You might blow the deal with your attempts to get the second money, but it's nonsense. This kind of thinking is for little mediocre salespeople of the world, not for you. This is for the big dreamers. You're an actor or an actress and you're going in for an audition. Why go for one? Why don't you go for two? Why don't you kill it? Go for it. Be unreasonable. Second money, second decisions are for those who want to take their game and their income to the next level and want to do it in half the time. Look, you'll spend 90% of your time eating the main course. You'll spend 10% of your time eating the dessert. What does that tell you? Get the first sale wrapped up, then focus on the second sale. It's dessert. This is a monster technique that works like magic. All a salesperson, and we're all salespeople, right? All you have to do to unlock the door to the second money is to get over your fear of blowing a deal, an opportunity. I'm going to miss it. Remember, there's no scarcity. Ask for the second sale. Remember, money is a mental issue, not a shortage issue. Chapter 8, you're in the people business. It's the people business, not the X business. You know, manufacturers are constantly pushing product awareness and product knowledge because they believe, the manufacturer does, that this is the weakness of the sales force. The manufacturers are telling the salespeople how to sell. It's crazy. They're manufacturers. They manufacture, right? They think if salespeople just understood how the product worked and all the benefits, then the salespeople would sell more, or the franchise would sell more, or whoever's distributing the product would move more product. While it's true that salespeople must have a great understanding of their product, one must not forget that no matter what you're selling, you're in the people business. It's people who buy those products. That's why it is vital that salespeople know about people first, product second. I've known salespeople who understood every in and out of the product. They knew every detail, but were unable to close the deal as they have an inferior, disabling understanding of people. Being superior in product knowledge, yet inferior regarding people knowledge, equals minimal results. Understanding the product before you understand people is like putting the cart, if you will, in front of the horse. It won't go anywhere. Realize right now you're in the people business first and the product business second. Certainly you need product knowledge. I'm not saying you don't. You have to know the benefits. You have to know how the product compares to other products. But first and foremost, you need to understand people and what they want before you can sell the product or show someone the benefits of your product. Most people I meet spend too much time selling the product and forget that selling is 80% people, 20%, maybe 20% product. This is justified by people buying inferior products every minute of every day. Every minute of every day, somebody buys a product that's inferior. Why? Why is this? Because people buy for reasons other than just the product benefits. A person stops into a convenience store after work, buys a carton of milk. Is that brand of milk the best they could possibly drink? Is it the best price in town? That person doesn't know and doesn't care because it's not the carton of milk they're buying at that moment. It's the convenience they're buying that will get them home to their family as quickly as possible so the kid can have some milk. The shoeshine guy at the airport. See, he doesn't understand that it's not the price or the quality of the shoeshine that keeps people from shopping at his booth. He doesn't realize this because he thinks people are having their shoes shined. He thinks he's shining shoes. The reason the businessman doesn't stop for a shoe shine in JFK or O'Hare or Los Angeles Airport or Houston Intercontinental or Denver, the reason they don't stop is not because they don't need a shine. It's not because of the cost. The business person is concerned about missing his connecting flight. If the shoe shine guy advertised 60-second shines, that's a nice ring to it, 60-second shines, he'd have to expand his booth to handle all the business. To get the right button to close the sale, that is what people are really interested in, people business, you have to know that you are in the people business and not in the shoe shine business or the insurance business or the acting business or the car business or the cable business or whatever it is you're selling. Learn to think like they think. Products do not think. Products do not feel. Products do not react. People do. You may know I live in Los Angeles, and my wife and I, we buy gas from a station on Sunset Boulevard that's about a mile from our home. Now, there's four other stations on the same corner. But the funny thing about this one station is the owner comes out, greets us by name, fills the car up, cleans the windshield, and gives us a bottle of water for free. The price of the gas is exactly the same as the guy across the street. I think. I'm not sure because I never go to the guy across the street. That's an interesting concept. See, now at that point, am I buying the gas or am I buying the service? Is this about people or the grade and quality of the fuel that he's putting into my car? Is the owner selling people or is he selling gas? Is he servicing people or selling gas? Where do you think we fill up every time? If he's open, we're going there. See, if you understand people, then you'll know the right answer. It's got to be obvious to you. Maybe you'll shop and go for the lowest price. I'm not interested. I want the service. And most people do. The owner of this station understands that he's not in the gas business. He's in the people business, which is why we continue to buy gas from him. And it's also why I never know what his competition's charging, because I never go there. And even if I did go there, I'd be disappointed. No water, no name, no windshield cleaned, just cheap gas. See, it's been said that people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. I believe this to be true, and I can validate it with commission checks. I never consider I'm selling a product. I've sold many, many products at many different price ranges from $10 to $100 million. I never consider that I'm selling a product, but I do consider that I'm helping a person make the right decision. I've sold fish, cars, clothes, real estate, videos, jewelry, investments, books. What else have I sold? Charitable contributions, vacations. I've sold a lot of stuff. And I found that I did best. I've always achieved the most when I was most interested in the individual, when the human being that I had the human part of enjoying life, solving problems, reassuring people that they're buying the right product or service, that's when I excel. More often than not, salespeople will launch into their pitch without ever knowing anything about a customer, which is a surefire way to miss a sale. What is important to this person? What does this person need? What is this person concerned with? What is the ideal scene for him or her? What is it they are actually trying to accomplish with the purchase? What is it that really makes them feel good? If they could get everything they wanted, what would that thing be? These are the questions that will let you know how to communicate to people and let them know that you're in the people business, not the product business. Take interest in the client instead of interest in selling the client. When a buyer goes out looking for a product, he doesn't care how much you know about the product. He only cares about himself. He cares about his time. He cares about his money. And he cares about doing the best thing for himself. He doesn't care about you or your product at that point. He cares most about himself at this time, and you and your product are way down on the list of his concerns. The most interesting person in the world. You know, I may not be the most interesting person, but I am the one I am most interested with, W.C. Fields. This is a great story to consider. People are far more concerned and more interested in themselves, their family, and in doing the right thing for themselves and their family than they are in having another product, no matter how much they actually need or want the product. If you don't show as much interest in the person you're working with, and the concerns that he or she has, as you actually do in selling and in your commission, he'll know that you're only in it for the commission, in it for the money, in it for your job. He'll know. Be more interested in the customer than you are in yourself. Make yourself second and him first. Make your product second or third and him first. Make your sales process less important. Be more interested in your customer than you are in yourself, your sales process, your product, or your commission, and you will make more sales. Now, this is a point to management. Management, anytime you put your sales process senior to the person buying, your sales process will fail. My wife and I recently met with a high-end veteran real estate agent who was showing us a house. And we happened to go to this open house, met this woman. I realized who she was. She's done a lot of work in this town, and she's been in real estate sales for 20 plus years. She's not one of the top agents, but she's definitely very, very good. As we were walking through the property, I began to tell the agent what was most important to us, at which point she cut me off and continued to pitch the house. I tried to tell her, I'm really interested in this, and she cut me off again. And then I go to tell her something else. She cuts me off again. You'd think that this agent was a complete rookie to the business. Not the real estate business, but certainly to the people business. On the contrary, she's been in real estate for over 20 years with much success. But she is by far great. She has not reached the top 1, 2, or 3 in her field. And the difference between the top 1, 2, and 3 and number 10 in real estate in Los Angeles is millions of dollars in income. Well, maybe that's part of her problem. She doesn't listen and she doesn't take interest in people. She's too busy selling the product and not interested enough in the people that buy the product. She had joined the ranks of those in the real estate business that had forgotten she was in the people business. While 90% of all salespeople don't take the time to listen to the prospect or find out what they actually want, what they're looking for, what will motivate them, while this agent has been very successful compared to 90% of all agents, imagine what this agent could do. Imagine what she could sell if she was genuinely interested in people and in determining what they really wanted and what they really needed. It would certainly save her time, as she would now know what to show me and how to sell me. It's easy to do. All you have to do is be interested. You have to know how to communicate. Not talk, but communicate. See, I'm talking right now. I'm not communicating. I'm talking. True communication requires finding out what is important to people so you can identify what they actually want and deliver that thing or things. That means I have to ask a question, get an answer, and show how this fits. What do you value? What is important? Why is it important? How do they want to be spoken to? What is going to cause someone to take action? Those are straight up questions you can ask people. One time I was selling a condominium. We owned 144 condos in Tucson, Arizona. And we were selling a condominium there. And I was actually in the office sitting down with a couple. And I observed within the first 60 seconds that the husband wouldn't look at me. I waited another 10 or 15 seconds. He still wouldn't look at me. I waited another 15 seconds. He wouldn't look at me. After a full 2 minutes of this, I'm talking to her. We're in communication. He won't look at me. After 2 minutes, I bluntly looked at him and said, excuse me. I cut the communication with her and went to him. Excuse me. Why won't you look at me? He was shocked. Like he just came right out of his shoes. He looked at me. He's like, what? I said, why won't you look at me? He was shocked at first, but then started immediately talking. See, I had taken interest in him. And when he did start communicating with me, I asked him, hey, what is your ideal scene? I know what your wife wants. What do you want? The question allowed him to open up. He told me everything they, him and her, were looking for. During the conversation, the subject of golf came up. So I showed him, I stopped my sales pitch and showed him where the closest course was. He went on and on and on about golf, how he loved it. He didn't stop, by the way, until he signed the documents. I didn't even sell my condo. You know what? I didn't pitch my condo. I got in communication. I just took interest in him and her. I got into communication. I made him more important than the product I was selling. Now, many of you won't do that. Hey, why aren't you talking to me? You won't do that because you're worried about losing the sale. But you see, you're putting the sale in priority more important than the people. I found out what was important to him because I got into communication. I listened, and then I let him close himself. Communication equals sales. If you don't get into communication with the prospect, the buyer, whoever you're presenting your proposal to, you have no chance of ever making the sale. The dictionary defines communication as a process in which information is exchanged between individuals through common symbols or behavior. Communication is exchanged. See, talking about your product is not communicating because there's no exchange of ideas between you and the buyer. In sales, we're interested in communication that gains access to information, which then can be turned into action. To gain information means that your communication should include lots of questions. Hey, what do you want this product to do that your present one doesn't do for you? What would your present product have to do to satisfy you? So you wouldn't buy a new product. That's a great question. On a scale from 1 to 10, how would you rate what you're using now? What would make it a 10? See, this type of interested in you questioning, and you can make a whole list of them, and you should. This type of interested in you questioning will help you discover what your prospect wants, what they need, and most importantly, what they assign value to. What you assign value to and what they assign value to are two different things. What you think's important and what your wife thinks important, or your spouse, your husband, completely different most of the time. Additionally, asking questions demonstrates your interest in the individual. It demonstrates interest in the individual, and people want to know you're interested in them, not just a sale and not just a commission. Years ago, I was shopping for a computer. And the salesperson starts reeling off speed, memory, storage capacity, megabytes, all the technical information that not only meant nothing to me, but I don't even care about. I walked away feeling like a zombie from all his technological terms and the misunderstandings he puked and spewed onto me and didn't make a purchase. I was with him for probably 30 or 40 minutes. A week later, still have a problem, hadn't bought anything. Puker before me couldn't close because he didn't know anything about selling. A week later, I wander into another store and I met a real salesperson who approached me and immediately started asking me questions rather than spewing data. He asked me if I'd been traveling with a computer, how I would use it, what were my three main uses, and this would help him determine not only how I am using it, but how he can help me, what is valuable to me and what I value. That salesperson showed more interest in me in 60 seconds than the other person did in 30 minutes. He was also genuinely interested in finding the right product for me rather than making a sale. I told him I'd been considering buying a particular model, to which he promptly explained that that computer that I was considering was more than I actually needed and that I would have spent more money than was necessary. His helpful advice increased my trust, caused him to have more credibility with me, putting him in a position to control the sale and actually keep me interested. Well, this is what happened. I wound up buying two laptops and a desktop computer from him in less than 20 minutes. Before I left, I asked him what else I might need and purchased extra memory cards, software programs, and extended warranties. Look, the first guy took, 15, 20, 30 minutes demonstrating his product knowledge, but never bothered to find out about me and didn't get the sale. Why? He put product knowledge before people knowledge. The guy who sold me the product and got the commission, hey, he knew the product knowledge. That was essential for him to guide me to the right product, but he knew about me. He didn't put product first. He put me first. The human quality involved in selling can never replace, can never be replaced, and becomes even more beneficial the more deeply we become entrenched in this thing called the machine age. I want to clarify that when I suggest you ask questions, it is not done with the intent of manipulation. This has been greatly misused and promoted by sales trainers for years. Questions are asked to find out more about helping the human being in front of you, not manipulating. I don't ask questions to find out your budget in order to manipulate my product to fit your budget. Many books regarding sales itself suggest a tactic of collecting information to use against a buyer later. There are even tricks suggesting the salesperson doesn't answer the question, but that he responds to the buyer's questions with more questions. Look, this is pure, absolute manipulation. It is not communication with the intent of helping, and it will not serve you over time. Look, I'm in the people business. I'm not in the product business. I'm in the people business, certainly not in the business of manipulation. And I expect you are not in the business of manipulation either. Remember, people are senior to products. Now, this section is critical for executives. Make this a fundamental rule you live and die by. Okay? You are in the people business. Management, your people are in the people business, not the product business. People are senior to products. People are senior to the processes, even the processes employed by companies. No product or sales process will ever be successful if it doesn't make people senior. A product is dead. People are not dead. A product is a function and is always less important than people. To the degree that a company's sales processes become more important than the people, salespeople and the customers, that process will fail. A personal friend of mine and rookie commercial real estate agent asked me once for a meeting about investment property I was considering. I won't mention the name of the company that he worked for, but I can tell you that they're one of the largest firms in the world representing apartment buildings, and they have relied on a very stringent sales process for years. I told my friend, the rookie, to come to my house for a meeting. He told me it was essential that I come to his office rather than him coming to see me. Well, I thought this was strange and told him, look, man, just meet me in my office. Let's figure out how I can buy something from you. He called me back, insisted, Grant, you have to come to the office. This was totally uncharacteristic of my friend. I asked him, why do you continue to insist on me coming there because there is no way I'm going over there to meet you? At this point, he agreed. Okay, Grant, I'll come to you. When he finally got to my home, we sat at my kitchen table and I asked him, hey man, why did you continue to persist 3 times that I come to your office when I kept telling you I didn't want to do that? He explained to me, he had just been to a seminar and the company sales approaches insisted that the client go into the office. This was a control point, he suggested to me, that the company promoted to their young salespeople, suggesting they would be able to control the client better and get more listings. While it's vital to have a sales process in place and that it be followed, the moment the process becomes senior to the servicing of the customer, it will error. This particular process failed to include or consider me the customer, the only one that can buy anything. Oh, by the way, my friend never sold me any real estate. Instead, he quit his job at that company after I convinced him to come work for me, managing my property, managing purchases. This proved to be a very, very successful decision for both of us. He went on to become a prosperous business owner and real estate entrepreneur. To this day, he thanks me for not meeting him at his office. Remember, people are senior to processes. I remember I bought a Hummer, the H2, first came out. I was so elated, excited. After seeing the vehicle for the first time on Sunset Boulevard, I immediately called up a Hummer dealership because I wanted to buy one. I didn't want to know about it. I wanted one. I wanted it now. See, I didn't need a Hummer, but I wanted one, and I wanted it, and I wanted it now. A salesperson answered the phone. I said, look, hey, I want to know how much that Hummer is, that H2. I just saw one on the street, the yellow. It's hot. I got to have one. He told me, hey, we can't give you a price on the phone. I asked him if there was something wrong with him. Because I just called for a price. Hey, how much is it? And then you tell me you can't give me one. Well, he said it was a company policy. I said, company policy? Your policy is not to give a price? I called you. I asked for a price. Now we're arguing, right? He said, no, it's a company policy. I don't want to argue with you. I'd love to, but I can't give you a price on the phone. Wow. What a policy that is. Now, if you're a car dealer, it might make sense to you. But everybody else listening to this is going to be like, that policy sucks. See, here's a Hummer dealership that has a policy in place that prevents people from purchasing anything. He told me that the policy was there, put in place to prevent people like me from shopping price over the phone and then going to a competitor. Hey, I hadn't even been thinking about shopping a competitor until he planted the seed in my mind. Maybe I should shop the price. I wondered why the Hummer dealership bothered to advertise their phone number if they weren't willing to answer questions. Seems like a waste of advertising. This is a perfect example of a business that has implemented poor policy in an effort to prevent people from shopping competitors. They're trying to solve one problem and actually create another one. Some genius in management came up with a policy, or some consultant suggested something in some seminar. Management goes back and says, yeah, let's don't give price. But you didn't think it all the way through. You end up creating more problems that prevent people from buying, but also makes no sense to the customer. Probably makes no sense to the salespeople. Everybody goes into resistance. This results in a complete waste of advertising dollars, creates a confrontational environment, destroys sales, and creates high turnover. Process put in place without considering the effect on the people will not be effective, but destructive. People are always going to be and should be treated more important than the actual processes, procedures, or policies. People write checks, policies, and processes don't. Products are dead matter, and people are alive. Products can be replaced. People cannot. Products don't sell themselves. People do. Never forget, people buy products, and it's your job to sell people on your products, not to sell your products to people. Caring about people is senior to the products and the processes you use. Being genuinely concerned that your customer is getting the right product for them. Make that individual more important than the individual sale and you will make more sales. Be interested in what the person is trying to accomplish and what problem he's trying to solve and treat people as individual, as living, breathing individuals that are irreplaceable. Stay interested before the sale, during the sale, and after the sale, and even if you don't get the sale. Don't ever let the process be senior to the people involved. And remember, you're not in the real estate business any longer. the mortgage business, the insurance business, the investing business, the newspaper business, clothing business, acting business, hotel business, seminar business, whatever business your industry labels itself, quit that business. Right now, quit it and get into the people business. Chapter 9, The Magic of Agreement. Always, always, always agree with the customer. This is the single most important and most commonly violated rule in all of selling. If you want agreement, you've got to be agreeable with your customers. This vital rule is not to be confused with the old saying, the customer's always right, because, look, customers aren't always right. If you've ever been with me, you know that I believe agreement is critical to your survival. If you've ever been with a customer before, you will notice that they're more interested in you agreeing with them than you being right. The point is, right or wrong, agree with the customer. Agree as you write your proposal. Don't disagree. Don't fight people. Agree with people. You can never expect someone to agree with you. If you're disagreeing with them, it just won't happen. People are attracted to products, ideas, and people that represent those things they're in agreement with. This is a fact of the universe. This isn't some sales technology. This is the fact of people, man. People want to go and move toward agreements. Your friends are those people that most agree with your core beliefs. Your favorite family members, they're not all favorites. Come on, admit it. Your favorite family members are those people you want to spend the most time with during those holidays. And they're the same people that you have the most agreement with. These are the people in your life that you've got the most agreement with. You agree on the same club. You agree on the same politics. You have basic agreement. People that agree with one another move toward each other. And people that disagree move apart. You know the old saying? Opposites attract doesn't happen. You know what I'm saying? Opposites attract. It's not true. It doesn't happen to be true in sales for sure. Oil and water, okay? They repel one another. Same thing with disagreements. Oil and water are disagreements. In selling, likes attract. And like is born out of agreement. I like you now because I agree with you at some level. It only takes one. You know, when there's not enough agreement between two parties, then there will be no agreement at all. This is the reason for partnerships failing, marriages breaking up, and the main reason you don't have more customers buying from you. Most people think that it takes two to have an agreement, but the truth is, it only takes one. It only takes one because once one opposing party agrees and no longer disagrees, there is no longer any disagreement. The salesperson. You, who wants agreement, must give agreement to the customer before agreement can be achieved. You get it? Your agreement precedes their agreeing. Even when a buyer is making ridiculous claims or exaggerations, you have to agree with him. Just because you think what he's saying is ridiculous doesn't mean he thinks it's ridiculous. If he thinks something is black and you think it's white, you're both right. However, if he thinks something is black and you want to get the sale, you'd better agree with his reality that it's black. If he thinks he should wait and think about it for a while and you disagree with him, I swear to you, I guarantee you will solidify his need to wait and you won't get the close. However, if in the same example, you were simply to agree with him that thinking about it is a good idea and let him know that you absolutely agree with his viewpoint, he will become more attracted to you and move toward you, not away from you. You get it? Because you're agreeing with him. Once that agreement is in place, you can then go ahead and explain that thinking will not change the fact that this is the right product, that he can afford the product, and that his company will save money because of the product. And by making the decision to do it now, he can put his attention on all the other things he needs to think about. Agree with him first, which will bring him to another way of thinking, getting closer to you, and then you can handle the objection. I'll give you an example. I wanted to add a fourth dog to our fleet of dogs, to our family, and my wife was dead set. Now, she loves animals, but she's like, no, we have enough. I'm dead set against the idea, right? The first thing I did was agree with her. Baby, you're right. You're absolutely right, honey. You know, the last thing we need is another Great Dane. With a raised eyebrow, she asked, you agree with me? Absolutely, baby. I agree with you. You're right. There is no sense. It makes no sense in us having four dogs. It's just ridiculous. That was the point where she looked at the picture of the puppy, the little white Harlequin Great Dane that I was considering. She looked at me, a little smile crosses her lips, and she's like, "He's so cute." Done. Dog number four is in the house. Do you get it? Agree. Acknowledge. Make the other party right, and then go about selling and closing. There's no single rule that salespeople violate more than this rule, and it happens to be the number one rule in selling any product, any idea, about anything. Agreeing is the road to more sales. Agreeing is the road to getting what you want in life. Agreeing is the road to riches. This needs to be drilled and practiced because man, particularly in the West, is inclined to disagree in order to satisfy his gluttonous craving to be right. So you need to really, really drill this because every day you're trying to be right all the time. You don't want to be right now. You want to be agreeable. So here's the agreement challenge. You have to really, really practice this. And it's best if you practice with friends, family members, and work associates. You may even find it harder with them than people you don't know. You can record different scenarios in like a recorder and practice handling them where you agree first and handle later. So this is the drill. Try to agree with everyone you talk to for one day. Try this around the house, as you will be given endless opportunities every day to do the exact opposite of what I will be asking you to do in this drill. I'll bet you can't even make it one day without violating this very vital and basic rule of selling. Agree. Try it. Try it for a day. If you find yourself disagreeing outwardly with any person, then start over until you get through the whole day agreeing with everyone. Look, I know people that started this exercise at 8 o'clock. By 8:30, it already failed. Your kid walks up to you as soon as you start the drill, says, "I don't want to go to school today, Dad. I don't want to go to school today, Mom." And you're like, "Put your clothes on." Up, fail, flunk. Handle him by agreeing first. "I understand, little dude. I understand what you're saying because I didn't want to go to school on Fridays either, man. I hated it. Now get dressed, my little buddy, and let's get you to school." See, agree first and then sell. Your husband wants to go to a new action movie with you. You're sick of action movies. You'd rather go to a romantic dinner. That'd be a new one. What are you going to do? "I don't want to go see another action movie. I hate kill flicks," right? No, flunk. What are you going to do? "Hey, great idea. Let's go to the action movie. I know how much you love them. I love holding your hand while people are getting shot up and cars are flipping in the air. I love it." Agree first. "You're right. Let's do it. Great idea. Hey, why don't we go down to the new cafe first and get a bite before we even go to the movie?" See, agree first. Once you've agreed, it's possible then to suggest alternatives that are more suitable for you. Now that you're in the cafe, you'll either buy time and learn how to sell him on something else, or you'll have to go to the action movie. Sell or be sold, okay? It's up to you, because you're always selling either way, or you're getting sold. Either way, you're going to spend time with your husband, your spouse, and both of you can win. A client tells you, "It's too much money." Now, it's for real. Now we're in the real world, baby, where it costs dough. And money's not the most important thing. I'd rather get along with my wife, personally. Truth is, I'd rather be able to do both. Know how to agree with her and handle her, and know how to get it done at work, too. Client tells you, "It's too much money." Maybe you're asking for a raise. That's your client. Your boss is your client. Maybe you're trying to sell a product. Whatever, a service. You're selling a service. "It's too much money." It's time. It's on for real. "Sir, I agree it's a lot of money. Everyone that invests in this product agrees this system is a big investment when they're buying it. That's why you should get it installed so I can start making you money right now." See what I'm doing? Agree and then go. "A new roof? A lot of money." "I agree it's a lot of money. Your new roof is going to last for 30 years. There won't be any more leaks, no costly repairs, no worries, no problems. And look, you got to do it sooner or later. Let's get it done now." "Hey, the bedrooms are too small," the buyer says. "You're right. I agree. It's the first thing I noticed when I came in here. What do you think we can do about it?" "What do you mean? What are you going to do about the bedroom?" "Yeah, me and my husband were talking. We're just going to blow out this wall over here. Let them come up with a solution. You don't have to come up with all of them." See, agree, and then offer the buyer an opportunity to find their own solution before you start running around trying to create solutions to objections that might not even be real. They say, "We never make a rash decision." What are you going to say? Practice this. Drill it. "And I agree with you. To make a rash decision would be a wrong thing to do, and I wouldn't want you to do that. However, folks, if I may, You've been thinking about upgrading for some time now. You've been using the same computer system for almost 10 years. And hey, you called me. You know it's time to update. If you would have done it 9 years ago, I would say it was rash. But 10 years? Come on. This thing makes sense. Let's do it. The ability to agree with the customer is senior to all other rules of selling. I don't care what the rule is, what you learned, who you learned it from, what God told you to sell like this. This rule cannot be violated. Agreement is senior to closing the deal. I can't believe I'm saying that because I see the close as something sacred. However, if you disagree with someone before you close, you risk never getting to the point where you can close. Show me the top 1% of all the salespeople in any industry. Put them in one room and I'll show you people who are masters, geniuses at agreeing with people first and closing later. Salespeople are constantly trying to sell and negotiate over disagreement. It's incorrect. This is no different than trying to swim against the current. Salmon swims upstream, baby. You know what's going to happen? They're dying to lay their eggs. You don't want to do that. In most cases, a person doesn't drown from water in his lungs. He drowns from exhaustion, fighting against the water itself, and then gets water in his lungs. Most salespeople drown in the negotiations from exhaustion of trying to overcome every objection. Start the sale from agreement, then continue to agree. Agree, agree, agree through the negotiations, make the buyer right, and close later. You're right. I'm with you. I agree. Let me see what I can do for you. I understand. I'll make it happen. Done. You're right. I'm with you. I agree. Let me see what I can do for you. I understand. I'll make it happen. Done. You're right. I'm with you. I agree. Let me see what I can do for you. I understand. I'll make it happen. Done. You need to drill that in until you're sick of hearing yourself, but it's automatic. Agree. Regardless of how off-key or incorrect the buyer may be, it is critical that the relationship is built on agreement if you want to make the sale. You go in to get a raise. I can't give you a raise right now, man. Business is tightening. You better learn how to do this if you ever want a raise. You'll find out how important selling is right now every time you go to get one. Some people will say that agreeing when you don't really agree is manipulation. While I'm willing to agree with them that they see it as manipulation, first rule of selling is agree. I'd have to agree with them. I see agreeing as my attempt, however, to get along. I think that disagreeing with people manipulates me out of a sale, and that doesn't make sense either. If you say it's hot and I think it's cold, I'm able to agree with your viewpoint that you think it's hot. What have I lost? Is that manipulation? I'm simply acknowledging that you think it's hot. This is not, by any means, manipulation. It is understanding the human condition. It is understanding the human being's need to be right. You didn't ask me what I thought about the temperature. You said it was hot. I think it's cold. You didn't ask me what I thought. All I did was agree with your reality without adding that I think it's cold, which would only serve to make you wrong. By establishing basic agreement, you're creating the opportunity to help your prospect, your buyer, your opportunity purchase your product or your service or your ideas. If the buyer never gets a chance to see what you're offering because of an earlier disagreement, then know that you've made an error by not allowing them to see your product or service in the proper light. All you've done is put their focus on the disagreement rather than on you, your product, your company, and your service. So how do you soften any buyer? Let's say I have someone telling me, okay, and when I say buyer, I'm talking about any situation. Let's say I have someone telling me that they've only got 10 minutes, and you know you can't do your presentation in 10 minutes. It wouldn't even be fair to you, your company, or your product. I've watched salespeople spend 10 minutes talking about how they can't do their presentation in 10 minutes. A better alternative, because all they're doing is disagreeing. They're basically saying, you're going to give me 10 minutes, but it's not enough. Disagreement. A better alternative is agree that 10 minutes would be fine and then go into your presentation. If you start the relationship off with agreement, you at least position yourself to have a chance to tell the prospect about your product. At least you spend the 10 minutes talking about something positive, not about something you can't do anything about anyway. Additionally, you'll come across as being understanding, easy to deal with, and very, very professional. I've personally been in hundreds of selling situations where the entire process, the entire relationship started off with the buyer limiting me on the amount of time that he would give me. Knowing if he limits my time, I can't make a sale. See, but I love this because I immediately tell them the time they've offered me is more than enough time. By the customer's response, you'd think I'd stepped into a phone booth, flew out with a cape on. The buyer looks at me like, wow, man, this guy's super salesperson. And they immediately know they're dealing with a pro, a professional, a great. Customers respect me immediately because the fact that I agree with them, not because I was slick in handling their objections. I agree. I'm smart. I'm intelligent. I don't want to fight. I want to respect people for what they give me and what they offer me. You give me 3 minutes. I appreciate it. That's more than I had. What created this response or change in the person, the individual, wasn't trick or manipulation. It was because I agreed to the limitation and I was willing to work with what time they offered me. I showed them respect and appreciation instead of voicing disagreement. Hey, I'd rather have 10 minutes than no minutes. What about you? By first agreeing with them, you can then move on with your presentation. Nothing will soften a buyer, a prospect, the person in front of you. Nothing will soften that person more than being agreeable. The magic words. Here are a list of magic words. Now, regardless of whether the customer is right or wrong, you need to make it safe for him to be right so he doesn't have to get stuck in his rightness, that he's unable to change his mind later. If you want people to agree with your viewpoint, all you've got to do is agree with their position, agree with their opinion, and step into their shoes for a moment. If you want to keep an argument going with someone, tell them how wrong they are. If you want to keep a raving maniac going on and on and on about how right he is, just disagree with him. He'll scream. If you want to get him to shut up, all you have to do is agree with him. He'll stop behaving like a raving maniac. There's no easier way to instantly end an argument than by agreeing with the opposition. A friend of mine who'd been married for 17 years said that the magic formula to her relationship was telling her husband, "You are right." Hey, how do you argue with that? By ending silly arguments, one can move on and enjoy the important things in life. Customer service problems can be handled the same way. When you get a complaint, go ahead and agree with the complaint. "You guys screwed up everything here." "I agree with you, sir. Let me figure out how to correct it for you." But if you tell him he's wrong, you're only adding gasoline to the fire of disagreements. You've probably experienced this phenomenon in your own life. As an exercise, try it with your spouse or friend. Wait until they say something and then tell them that they're wrong. Watch what happens. You've just fueled an argument. To end off the argument, now tell them that they're right. By agreeing, you cool off and put out the fire of disagreement. It may take more agreements to put out the fire then, though, however, than it takes disagreements to light it. End the argument with agreement. Pour it on like water on a fire. You know, I once told a salesperson, I was buying a product and I said, "Look, I'd just like to pay cash for this." At which time he said, no, you don't want to pay cash. You should finance it." And this created a block to my power of decision. It stopped my power to decide and move forward. It actually lessened my enthusiasm for continuing to do business with him. By disagreeing with me, and I know he wasn't really disagreeing with me, but he did tell me, "No, you don't want to do that." This person created a barrier to what should have been an easy sale. He could have simply said, even if he thinks me paying cash is a bad thing, he could have simply said, "Cash would be great, sir. Thank you." Then as he was taking my cash, he could have shown me both the cash price and the alternative if I had financed the product. At which point, I would have at least considered the alternative as a choice, not a make wrong. Agreement is the fastest route to getting your way. Do yourself a favor and practice agreeing with people. The three most powerful words in the English language are, "You're right." The two most powerful words in the English language, "I agree." Agree with the customer means control for the salesperson, happier customer, quicker decisions. Miracles take place out of agreement. Always, always, always agree with the customer. Chapter 10, Establishing Trust. Show, don't tell. In this chapter, you'll discover how you can earn and secure full trust with any buyer, and in doing so, increase your effectiveness. Because of a handful of unethical salespeople who have misrepresented the benefits of their products, customers may not completely trust everything you tell them. TV, news broadcasts, papers are constantly running stories about scams and cons that make consumers skeptical of salespeople. This skepticism keeps your prospect on guard and prevents the salesperson from correctly establishing the trust that is critical to making a decision or getting a decision. Regardless of the cause, it's critical that you're aware of the buyer's lack of trust and that you tackle that. Distrust in the sales cycle is not the buyer's problem, but yours. If the buyer doesn't trust you or your presentation, then the information that you're offering will be minimized, challenged, and shopped. Of course, the buyer will make a decision. It's just it won't be the one you want. When the buyer decides to think about it, that's a decision, but unfortunately, not the one you were looking for. Remember, a salesperson always gets a decision from the customer, always. I don't care what they tell you, think about it, not today, whatever. They decide to think about it, and you got them to do that. You convinced them to go home and talk about it. They decided to present it to the board. That was because of you. When the buyer doesn't trust the salesperson or something about the presentation, they'll always add time to the cycle by not making a decision to purchase. Even if you manage to close the deal, the unhandled element of distrust will almost always guarantee future problems in delivering and servicing this client. When a person understands what's going on in the mind of the prospect, the customer, he's just stepped into an area that only the greats, a great professional, would delve into. The unspoken thoughts of the customer is an interesting field where we are no longer looking at what the buyer said, but what he didn't say. We're looking at what's going on behind the scenes, actually in the buyer's mind. When a salesperson is willing to go there, into the mind, delve into this whole science of the mind, that's the point where he transitions from a painter to an artisan, to a specialist. All my studies in sales over the last 25 years has involved the mind of the customer, not just his money. Prospects don't make sales. Oh, by the way, if you want to know more about your own mind and how your mind works, call my office and they're going to suggest a book for you to read that will show you everything there is to know about how your mind works, how to control your mind, how to manage the thoughts that go through your mind, and how to understand other people and how they think. Great book. I've read it 6 times. I'm not going to tell you what it is right now. I'm going to have you call our office. As I stated earlier, prospects don't stop sales. Salespeople stop sales. Okay? You understand? Prospects don't stop sales. Salespeople stop them. Prospects don't make them. Salespeople make them. Understand also that prospects don't make the sale. It is you, your job, to make that sale. Whether or not the sale happens is entirely up to you, not up to them. In order to make the sale, a lot of people don't understand this. They're like, okay, I'll cross my fingers, hope I get a sale. You have to make that happen. In order to make a sale, you have to understand the mind, what the thinking is of this person. If you don't recognize how people think and what causes them to respond and act, you will be unable to take full responsibility and will never reach your full potential. When you step into this arena, you're now in the business of handling people, not handling products. People are run by their minds. Understand the mind and you understand the people. Most salespeople tend to blame their customers when sales are down, but they don't usually do so to the customer's face. It's interesting. They do it later when they're with their coworkers. Ah, this guy can't make a decision. He doesn't know what he wants. He's a jack. He's a flake. He's this. He's that. He can't buy. He's not for real. He wants more than he can afford. He's just wasting time. On and on and on. I never tolerate this sort of talk from any of the people that work with me. This unwanted behavior is an indication of very low responsibility. And low responsibility equals no sales. Low responsibility equals low levels of production. Low responsibility equals low chances at ever being successful. The salesperson must assume responsibility for himself, the prospect, and all that occurs. One time, a buyer in a retail furniture store said to me, I was selling furniture at the time, I might have been 16, 17, 18 years old, 17. Guy walks in and says, look, I'm not buying anything today. With a smile on my face, I replied, sir, if you don't buy anything today, it will be my fault, not yours. He looked at me with a grin and said, great, let me tell you what I'm looking for. The customer did buy from me that day, and we furnished his entire home. All I did was take responsibility for the selling and the buying. See, you guys are listening to this. You want to be responsible for only half the game, which means you can only control half the game. You have to be responsible for the selling and the buying. Also, I understood that him saying he wasn't buying was just a negative or reactive response that came from his mind, not really from him. It was a conditioning response. The only thing the buyer should ever have to do with me or you is give you money. They shouldn't have to buy anything. Just give me the money then. Okay, so watch. The buyer who states, I'm not buying today. This indicates his lack of trust of either salespeople or his ability to make good decisions. It's vital that you understand why the buyer is wary of people like you and why he distrusts his own ability to make decisions. These points must be understood and they must be handled in order for you to get what you want. When someone meets you and you sense his or her distrust, know that it doesn't have anything to do with you personally. You haven't even said anything yet. Perhaps the blue shirt you're wearing reminded him of someone he had a bad experience with. I don't know, but I do know that if you don't handle the distrust, you will not sell them. Credibility equals increased sales. The lack of trust will cost you sales. Distrust will cost you credibility. And a loss of credibility will add time and reduce the probability or chances at the sale. Credibility, I believe, to be one of the most valuable assets you and I have as a salesperson. When something happens that puts your credibility into question, it becomes extremely difficult to get that person to trust his decision to do business with you. If an element of distrust exists, no matter what you say or how you beg, plead, or persuade, realize that you've got your hands full and you must handle distrust first in order to get any job done. You must rebuild your credibility immediately. I mean, the first thing to do is not lose it. But once you lose it and you know it, you have to rebuild it. Ignoring the credibility issue does not make it not be there. It's still there. It has to be handled. When the buyer doesn't trust, you can use all the greatest closing lines throughout history and watch them fall upon deaf ears. Great salespeople understand the buyer's distrust. They accept full responsibility for that distrust, and they never, ever take that distrust personally. So I'm going to say that again. Great salespeople understand the buyer's distrust. They accept full responsibility for the buyer's distrust and take full, total, absolute responsibility and never take it personal. I always assume that the buyer doesn't trust a single word I say to them. I just assume that. They might not even believe that my name is what it is. That's why I wear a name tag. A name tag is a great idea for if you're in the consumer business today. A name tag creates something that they know they can trust and depend on. Why? Because they can see a name tag. When I'm talking about a product, I provide everything that I say to my buyer or prospect in writing. I support what I'm saying with printed materials. If I'm telling someone that the piece of property is 44,000 square feet, I show them the documentation that supports my statement, and this will start to show the prospect that I'm trustworthy, that I know what I'm doing. And he'll lend credibility now to what I say in the future. The more I show him now, the less need he will have for proof later. People believe what they see, not what they hear. Have you ever noticed that a buyer isn't fully listening to you when you're talking to him? This phenomenon occurs because the buyer assumes that he can't trust what a salesperson says. People believe what they see. They never believe what they hear. Most people don't believe what they hear. They put much more value in what they see. Always have your presentation, your proposal, your prices, your offer in writing for the buyer so that they can see it with their own eyes. Your prospect will not believe words he hears, but will believe the words they can see. Tell a guy some unbelievable and bizarre, outrageous conspiracy theory that you heard about, and then show him the article where you read it. If it's in writing, it becomes more real to him. Just try it. Start off with some conspiracy story, okay? And then show him some. Show him proof of one, okay? And watch the reaction. I had this very, very wealthy friend of mine, and I wanted to get him to invest with me or consider investing with me on a piece of real estate. Well, I didn't tell him the thing about the property when I called him. I didn't tell him about the deal, how great the investment was. I didn't waste 1 second telling him about any of that, even though it was true. Because he's been told this thousands of times, okay? I called him and said, hey, would you meet me at the property? Because I want to get your opinion on this piece of property. And I want to get your opinion on how I can expand my company. And I want you to see what I was doing and see if I can get some advice from you. Well, I showed him the property. I showed him the tenants there. I showed him the competition I had. I showed him the location. And I showed him the possibilities. I showed him what I was going to do with it. Within 30 minutes of touring just one of the projects, he was asking me, hey, can I invest in this? Is there any way for me to get on this? Could I put some money in this? Would that be helpful to you? Interesting. I showed him. I didn't tell him. So I want you to make this a rule that you sell by. Assume that your buyer, no matter how well you know this person, he's your dad, your mom, your uncle, your aunt. Assume that no matter how well you know this person, that they will never believe your words and will only believe that which you show them. As I stated earlier, there are many reasons for distrust, and it is necessary that you know what they are. The most common and least considered is the buyer's own